Yes, it's number one. It's Top of the Pops.
Top of the Pops. We've got all the Top of the Poppers ready to do the whole bit.
Hello, nice to be back with you once again on Top of the Pops.
Welcome to the number one pop show with the number one sounds, Top of the Pops.
In the time on the tradition, hello, good evening, and welcome to another edition of Top of the Pops.
Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Top of the Pops.
It's TOTP time, so let's hang on in there, baby.
Hello, it's the chart show on TV.
Pay attention at the back. After all, it is Top of the Pops.
Top of the Pops.
Celebrating the special relationship the station of the nation enjoyed with BBC TV's most iconic music show during the 60s, 70s and 80s, this is My Top of the Pops at 60, the Radio 1 Years with Sean Tilley.
Hello, a very happy new year to you. Thanks for joining us and welcome to this epic anniversary programme marking 60 years since the first edition of Top of the Pops back in 1964. Another milestone in broadcasting history was the launch of BBC Radio 1 in 1967, and from then on, both the radio station and TOTP went hand in hand for the remainder of the 60s through the 70s and 80s. Coming up then, during this show, we'll be hearing from a huge cast of DJ legends who'll be sharing their memories of hosting arguably the world's biggest TV chart show. Some are no longer with us, sadly, so the chats I had with them have been taken from our Top of the Pops playback and My Radio 1 series. Plus, there's tons of classic clips to enjoy from the archives. Firstly, though, to get a flavour of those early pioneering days of TOTP before the arrival of Radio 1, let's hear from one of its original compares, the great Pete Murray.
Yes, it's number one. It's Top of the Pops.
Johnny Stewart phoned up and said, can I come to see you? And he came round to my flat. I lived at Baker Street at the time. He said, look, I've got this idea. You did Top 20 for years on Radio Luxembourg at 11 o'clock, and it was, massive. He said, and I want to do something very similar, although I can't obviously make it entirely top 20 or top 10 even because of availability of artists. But I'd like to do something. I want to have a hit parade show, as much of a hit parade show as I can do on television, and I'd like you to host it. And at that time, I had a manager who was trying to promote my acting once again. And I'd had a reasonable amount of success in one way or another. And he said, you can't go on doing this pop stuff. So I said to John, I said, I don't really want to do it. He said, well, why don't you want to do it? And I explained to him why I didn't want to do it, because of my manager. It didn't help me at all in that case. Anyway, eventually he said to me, well, how about if I got three other disc jockeys, you did one a month. I said, okay, that'll be fine.
Thank you very much indeed, Sandy Shaw, for Long Live Love. And now we've got a record that was top of the hit parade, number one in April and May of this year. Tell me, my dear, what do you think of the Beatles? Oh, she's gone raving mad. Never mind. And do you know the title of the song that was number one in April and May?
Ticket to Ride.
Oh, you're a clairvoyant. That's why you are. Not your vibrations, my dear. Here they are.
Alongside Pete Murray, that first team of presenters also boasted the incomparable Alan Freeman.
This one happened over here in Great Britain in March. And what success they've had in America and Great Britain right throughout 1965. 4 weeks at number one in March for the last time from the Rolling Stones.
And the chairman of Jukebox Jury, the wonderful David Jacobs.
I was an obvious choice. After all, I was the chairman, as you say, of Jukebox Jury, and that's all we talked about was records. And the records that we talked about on that programme appeared very often on Top of the Pops.
Do you remember getting that call, the initial approach to do the programme?
Johnny Stewart was an old friend of mine from radio days, and we'd worked together for years, so it was lovely to get the call and delighted to work with him.
And what were your first impressions when you got to that old disused church in Dickinson Road in Manchester and did your first programme?
Well, I was rather surprised, really, because there are so many great studios around the place. One was expecting to go to a similar sort of studio that one was used to. But the church was the church, and it had been de-sanctified, so we were all right. Thank heavens it had been de-sanctified.
Ken Dahl has had the most fantastic year. They wouldn't surprise anybody if he didn't get to number one, perhaps in the first weeks of 1966 with his latest record, The River. February was, in fact, a pretty sensational month for some gentlemen who are waiting on the stage with the record that went to the number one for them in February. Tired of Waiting for You was the song, but let's wait no longer for The Kinks.
But incredibly, all three of them were, dare I say it, around the age of 40. So how on earth did Pete not embarrass himself by looking old and stuffy, surrounded by hysterical pop-mad teenagers?
I never tried to be part of them.
Right.
Because I think that's an insult. And they would never accept it anyway. And the one thing I did, as opposed to anybody else, apart from probably David Jacobs, when I was doing Top of the Pops, I never wore anything casual. I used to go on looking like a bank manager, sometimes with a pinstripe suit and a very plain tie. And I did that because I wanted to be different. I've never worn a pair of jeans in my life. I'm a bit like Joan Collins. She said the same thing. Because everybody else is wearing them. Mm. I don't want to wear what other people were wearing.
Standing by me right now, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the finest soul singers in this country, Long John Baldry.
Hello, everybody.
And very aptly named. John, you've never actually had a hit yet, have you?
No, that's right, Pete.
Well, I hope in 1966 we'll be seeing you on Top of the Pops, because you deserve it. You're absolutely fantastic. And right now, a record that was number one for 5 weeks in November and December, the Rolling Stones' Get Off My Clad. Nah!
However, it did prove to be an increasing problem for David.
It was rather a shame, because I had one time found, in fact, one of the reasons I eventually came off was because the kids were getting younger and I didn't see myself really as a performer for children.
Yeah.
And I think I was, anyway, in a strange way, I think I was too sophisticated for Top of the Pops. I managed to fool them for quite a long time.
Yes, you did.
Well, we'll be having a good look at the Seekers a little later in the show, because, as you know, they have yet another number one in this year that is just about to finish. A few weeks before they got to the top with that one you've just heard, five young men were sitting pretty at the top with a certain song called Go Now. We'll go now with the Moody Blues.
Making way for a former offshore pirate radio DJ who was rapidly becoming British television's hottest property, unsurprisingly, David Jacobs stepped away from the programme in 1966.
I was ready to leave. And Simon D was ready to step in.
Were you a fan of Simon D's?
No.
What, as a person or as a performer? Oh, I know it's difficult now because he's passed on, bless him.
As a performer, he was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the only reason I said no was because I've never known a man with more chance for success than he had, and he messed it up.
Now, a great welcome for Top of the Pops 1966 for our next guest, whose song was written for him by Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, of course. One of the best sounds of the year. Out of time, Chris Farlow.
Simon was a strange fellow. He's passed away now, so I don't want to denigrate his memory, but he was quite difficult, and he had quite opinionated and divorced entirely from the rest of us.
Name this one for you. With a girl like you, has to be only one group. A big Top of the Pops welcome for the Drugs.
But it wasn't quite Simon's destruction time yet, as he was being lined up for his own Saturday primetime chat show on BBC TV. Whilst TOTP was excitedly promoting the Beeb's brand spanking new pop radio network.
Get tuned to Radio 102, 543, Radio 2, Radio 1, go.
And that meant the first ever appearance on the show for breakfast star Tony Blackburn just 3 weeks after he launched the network.
Welcome to the exciting new town of Radio 1.
Top of the Pops was such a big programme. It was one of those programmes, an appointment to view, really. And so it was incredible. I mean, I remember, when I went out on the streets, it's never really bothered me that. And the, you know, people coming up to me, I've always enjoyed that sort of side of it. But at the same time, you know, I remember wanting to go into a fish and chip shop and there were a load of people there. And I thought, well, I'll wait till it's all cleared a bit.
Yeah.
Because it was more difficult in those days. But it was very flattering at the time as well.
As they've introduced me, I'd like to introduce you to them, our fabulous dancers. They're called The Firm. And they're going to dance to a record that got to number one from a group who, unfortunately, they split up. But they made some fabulous records. And here it is from Eamon Corner. It's called Half As Nice.
It wasn't just Tony Blackburn who was getting thrown in at the deep end, so too were a couple of dearly departed friends of mine, Stuart Henry and Dave Cash.
Yes, it's number one, it's Top of the Pops.
Top of the Pops was the important thing to do. There was nothing else. Really, before MTV, there was nothing else. So what are we looking at, 1988, 1987, yeah. 88. So really, you know, that was it. You had to do it. Ready, Steady, Go to a certain extent, yes, on ITV, but Top of the Pops was the thing. You actually, and there was no player in those days, so you had to be somewhere. And I mean, there, I watched it every week religiously, no matter what was happening. If I was, you know, at a pub, I'd say to the guy, you know, can you put on Top of the Pops, please? You know, and nobody would complain. Eh?
Up from number 15 of last week to number 10 of this week, pitchers of Max Tickman, the status quo.
Being as you'd watched it for so many years, it must have therefore been an incredible thrill to end up presenting it.
Oh, it was. But I think that what they did, they tested out just about all the original Radio 1 disc jockeys in that slot. I think I did two or three or whatever it was. And when I talked to the producer, whose name escapes me, I'm terribly sorry, but I did talk to whoever it was a fella, I know that. And he said, well, what do you think, Dave? You think? And I said, I'd rather do the radio. And, of course, that just talked me out of a job. That was the end of it. But whether I was going to be chosen or not, I don't know. But Tony Blackburn got the gig, and I think Roscoe got the gig, and I can't remember who else, but, quite a few of us did. But I wasn't really that... I was more interested in watching than being...
Yeah. I think around this time, Ed Stewart started to do it. Even people like Keith Skews and Mike Lennox were having a bash at it as well.
Yeah. I think they tried everybody. They gave everybody a go. But it was like... We knew it was an audition.
Well, in its own kind of sign, girl. And when a group has an instant hit, it's very, very nice for them because they don't have to worry about selling records, and for disc jockeys because they know immediately to play it. Ladies and gentlemen, the brand new one, straight in at 12, By the Move, Fire Brigade.
Other fresh-faced disc jockeys from the all-new Radio 1 popping up on the programme at this time, including Kenny Everest and John Peel, but more about them later in this special show. And then there was the network's original Tea Time pinup, who appeared three times. We've sent him the running orders for each of those editions, so hopefully it'll jog a memory or two.
Hi, Sean. What an honour to be invited to do this.
Radio 1, David Simon.
David Simons?
Fantastic.
What kettle on, mother?
The other ones are still the best, aren't they? I think I shall crawl back into my little hole and I shall forget forever the idea of doing anything new. Anyway, for all mothers who are listening to Radio 1 this evening, here's your record, and it comes from Barry Ryan. A Clive Westlake composition. Come on, Barry. And tell us what it's called.
Well, you know what they say. If you can remember the 1960s, you weren't there. Just looking at those running orders. Of course, we had no input. Such memories. Everything the Plastic Penny with lead singer Brian Keith. He had a great voice and he was used for a lot of session recordings. The Association, who became great friends of mine. May I take this opportunity of wishing you and yours, Sean, all the best and a wonderful 2024.
Thank you very much, David Simon. So after meeting many potential hosts from the 247 team, the bosses at Top of the Pops decided upon Tony Blackburn and Stuart Henry as the new series regulars.
Thank you very much. A very good evening to you, my friends. I hope everybody's in a sort of good mood. On a Thursday at 7:30, another edition of Top of the Pops for the next half hour.
The Radio 1 DJs at the time were as big as the artists. You know, that was the truth of it. When we went and opened up shops and things, we had police protection and everything. It was amazing. I mean, I don't think the DJs nowadays realise what it was like, you know, coming out of this building, you know, particularly in when the school kids were on holiday. You know, it was massive and it was tremendous. I loved every moment of it. We all did.
In those early days of the network, you had the young DJs, yep, such as yourself, obviously, yes, yeah, and some of the older guys hanging around as well. And when I say that, a very memorable Top of the Pops appearance for you was the show that you did, I think it was around Christmas time or New Year, with Alan Freeman.
Yes, it's number one, it's Top of the Pops.
Clark and I were doing, it was a recorded show, luckily, and there was a countdown to the start of it, and I fainted into his arms. I got the flu. Oh, I suddenly came over really hot, and I fainted into Alan Freeman's arms, and when I came round, he said, that was a wonderful moment for me. It's the most wonderful thing that's ever happened. And I managed to complete the program with him, but then I had about 2 weeks off with the flu. So, but I remember that, you know, Fluff was lovely.
Hi, guys. You're all having a lovely Boxing Day out there as well, and that you're going to enjoy the show. We've got some lovely music, haven't we?
We have got some sensational music lined up in Top of the Pops for 1969. This is part two, incidentally, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Did you have a nice Christmas?
I had a super Christmas, a bit too much of the Christmas porn tone.
I can see it.
A bit of the old, you know, but never mind. Let's go on, because amongst all the smashes we've got on the show today, remember Mr. Tommy Rowe all the way from America?
Oh, yeah, marvellous.
Of course you remember all the way from America. Tommy Rowe and Dizzy.
These last two editions of Top of the Pops during the 1960s saw the final regular appearances of both Alan Freeman and another one of the originals.
Pete Murray was fabulous. You know, he was the person who showed me around the BBC. And you've got to remember, these guys had it all their own way for a long time. And suddenly they saw us younger people come in. And I remember Pete saying to me, well, our time is over here.
I would like to prove to you that, in fact, all the songs in 1969 didn't sound the same as some people seem to think they did, because in complete contrast to the one we've just heard, here we go. With the last tune, as far as today's programme is concerned, from the Rolling Stones, Honky Tonk Women.
Wow. So the last song introduced by Pete Murray on Top of the Pops in 1969 was the Stones with Honky Tonk Women. And by 1970, Teddy Blackburn was taking centre stage on the Pops every other week. But despite this regular contact with the hit makers of the day, he found it somewhat difficult to, shall we say, establish a connection with them.
We'd come into the studio in the morning, we'd do one run through, and all these acts, they all had their management and everybody around them and all the rest of it. So they'd come out, do a rehearsal, then go back into the dressing room, and the next time you'd see them would be on the actual show itself, and then they'd go. So with one or two, with a few exceptions, you never really got to know any of the acts.
So here's the original version, which has been top of the American hit parade for quite some time. It isn't quite there now, but it's been there for a number of times. Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head from BJ Thomas.
Hobnobbing and rubbing along with pop stars was no such problem, though, for our much missed pal Ed Stewart, especially when you consider that he was engaged to Eve Graham from the New Seekers around the time that he became a regular presenter of Top of the Pops in 1971.
Yeah, I'd done a few by then. I think I started in 1968. We were talking about this earlier, wasn't it, with Fluff Freeman.
Yeah.
And the two of us did a program together. They were sorting out the chaff from the chaos.
But you hadn't been on for 3 years, but all of a sudden, you were stringing together some regular appearances. What are your memories of doing Top of the Pops back in these particular days?
Well, nerves at the very beginning, because you walk into a studio and you're being moved around by the studio manager to various places to do your next intro from. You had to remember everything because you had no script.
Welcome you to our Christmas Day edition of Top of the Pops. My hat's fallen off as well. We've got some lovely music ready for you. Lovely music looking back over 1972 as we do, first of all, with The Move and California Man.
How did you find the recording process of Top of the Pops, Ed?
Well, it was much more complicated than just having a radio program and a couple of turntables, because we were self-op in the radio studios, which, of course, you weren't in a TV studio. You had a studio manager, you had the cameramen, and most of the stoppages whilst we were recording were technical, as opposed to, dare I say it, ourselves. Because if we made a hoo-ha of it, or we tripped up on a word, that was it. Tough. But if a lighting man got it wrong, or a bulb burst, or this or that, because you're talking about the early 70s, it was nothing like it is today. Then you had to stop and start again, and invariably they were more technical than they were down to us. Johnny Pearson and the orchestra, the Top of the Pops orchestra, occupied half the studio, because you had to have live musicians in those days and a live orchestra. And amazingly, when I started Crackerjack, I knew half the Crackerjack orchestra with Burt Rhodes, because he used to have them as well. And they were half of the same musicians who did Top of the Pops.
Hello, Creature World sings the New Seekers, one of the early hits of this year. What a lovely lot you lyrics lot are. Beautiful. They say it's coming back. Gilbert O'Sullivan was number one just a few weeks ago with Claire.
The crowds were well behaved. They'd waited for months to get a Top of the Pops ticket. And, of course, the next night was when it went out on air. So you can imagine them, after the Top of the Pops recording finished at about 8:30, 9 o'clock, they'd all be rushing off home to make sure they were in front of their tellies to see themselves and pointing themselves out to their friends and family. There I am, there I am.
Pay attention to the back. After all, it is Top of the Pops.
Yes, no mistaking that voice. Making his debut in 1972 was future Tony Blackburn replacement on The Breakfast Show and television megastar-to-be Noel Edmonds, which kind of made it a little bit frosty behind the scenes when they were co-hosting The Pops together in those early days, although you'd never know it watching them.
That's a T-Rex and Metal Guru.
And that's it. We've run right out of time. A reminder that next week, Top of the Pops at a different time. It's 6:45. Anyway, best wishes for the new year from everyone here.
Tell you what, we'll play Back Off Boogaloo by Ringo Starr. Thanks very much indeed for watching.
I was never as natural on television on, you know, on some of these programmes. That, like Noel Edmonds, for instance. Noel was an absolute, he took to television like duck to water.
Affection from one Donny Osmond with his puppy love. I suppose one of the most controversial characters of 72 was Alice Cooper with his rather unorthodox presentation of songs such as this, School's Out.
And some 5.5 years or so after he first turned up on Top of the Pops, guess who was back?
There I was, mucking out the pigs and milking things we don't mention. And they said, come on, Top of the Pops, lad. So I stuffed me straw into me back pocket and rushed down to London town to be with you all. And here, the second act on the show that you're going to love. What, what? It's the ELO.
Yes, there was only one Kenny Everett, as remembered by Babs, Dee Dee and the late Ruth from Pan's People.
Oh, dear Kenny.
Yeah, yes. Because Kenny had this year, 1973, where he ended up as a Top of the Pops presenter and did a handful of shows. Have you got any particular memories of him doing Top of the Pops?
Yeah, no, he was madly zany. That's what I loved about him. So over the top, he never.
But
knew
a
what
lovely
he was
man.
Yeah. But he did Top of the Pops, unlike any other presenter. Yeah. The rules went completely out of the window with him, which is fantastic
but
to watch now.
But that was what was lovely about him.
Yeah. We could have had a bit more of that. I think
we never quite sure what he was going to wear because I think he was a bit of a cross dresser.
It's very important to have such characters, I think, in the business.
He sadly missed.
See this massive thing? This is BBC Camera One, and it's through this obelisk that we're going to see now Pan's People dancing to Detroit Spinners!
No sooner had Kenny waved goodbye to Pan's People and the rest of the crew that night, he was off to join commercial radio in London, and his place on the Top of the Pops lineup was taken by Dave Lee Travis.
You know, I didn't remember that.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember Kenny doing the show, but I couldn't remember, you know, that moment of deciding to go over the wall.
And we'd be
a lot worse off for not having him on Top of the Pops anymore as well.
Jealous mind. Well, at this point in the proceedings, oh, forgive this, by the way, we decided as it's sort of Christmas that we'd have it in stereo. The other speaker's in the kitchen. Where are you? This is George McRae, Rock Your Baby.
Top of the Pops was a great show to do. There's no question about it. You know, so many people fighting to get on there, and you know, we were very lucky that we were asked to present it. You know, there wasn't that much hard work to do on it. I did occasionally do something really stupid.
Down to Murder Course and Tiger Feet. We hope you've had a great Christmas week and you've thoroughly enjoyed Top of the Pops, right?
Really, we do. We wish you a very happy new year, and if it's anything like this in 75, I shouldn't bother tuning in. Ladies and gentlemen, till the Top of the Pops 75.
See you in the new year. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
I remember one thing that I had. I was thinking I was doing a show with Noel, and I found a bowler hat somewhere, and I fitted it with Trafficators. And it was so weird. And you know the things that go on your bicycle, handlebars to flick left or right? I put one on my finger and had a wire going up my sleeve, and I've got this bowler hat on. I'm going left and right with the amber lights flashing.
Well, as my part for road safety in 75, I invented this Trafficator hat, you see, left and right. And I think it's only fair to go from a flasher to a streaker. Here he comes.
I remember you, particularly in the 1970s, doing the programme in, like, a Planet of the Apes costume and things like that. It looked as though you had an awful lot of freedom.
In the early days, they would allow you to do that, and that was part of the fun. It was after, you know, it was like 10 years or so later that, it's, you know, the business side of it started to creep in, and it got serious. And pop music is not serious. I mean, I do recall one occasion where I came in to introduce a song about motorbikes. and I came into the... I talked the director into letting me go out into the hallway outside the studio on a little monkey bike. I don't know if you've ever seen these tiny motorbikes.
Yeah.
They used to be the little Japanese motorbikes, and they're called monkey bikes. And they've got an engine, a 50cc engine and everything. And, you know, I rode in with a silly plastic helmet on, a kid's plastic helmet, with the cameraman walking backwards. And I'm riding up, and I rode all the way down the corridor into the studio, up to the stage. Everything was perfect. I was talking as I went, introduced the group, and then just let go of the clutch on the motorbike and leapt forward to the camera. And it was just one of those things. But yes, of course, that was the time you could suggest that to somebody and they'd see the humour.
Yeah.
And you know, why not have a laugh? Because people were talking about that for years afterwards.
Yeah. Health and safety would be one thing now, wouldn't it?
Oh, I mean, listen, you know. The funniest part about that one was, I didn't tell you, was that I had warned the producer that I was going to bring in this 50cc little monkey bike. And when I got in there, there were two guys in official uniforms with fire extinguishers standing by. And I said to them, what's going on? And they were looking at the bike with puzzlement. And they said, we were told it was a 500cc bike. So they thought I was going to ride in on a Ducati or something.
Three fantastic girls who are over here in Great Britain at the moment with their brand new sound. A toast of love and a toast to the 3 degrees.
Now, here's something that you may or may not know. Radio 1's exceedingly popular lunchtime jock at this time, Johnny Walker, surprisingly only ever did one Top of the Pops. As the chart man on Radio 1, you and I talked about this on another program before, my Top of the Pops playback series. But you were a main player at Radio 1, one of the key guys. Why is it that you didn't present Top of the Pops any more than the one occasion that you did?
Because I think TV, live TV, frightened me to death. And I did such a bad job of that Top of the Pops. I'm quite angry with the way that happened. I think I got a call about sort of 11 or 12 o'clock. Can you go to Elstree and do Top of the Pops tonight? Somebody obviously was ill or they couldn't do it. So I went to Elstree, turned up, and kind of watched what was going on. And I think all the studio manager and everybody involved, the director should have had a bit more involvement. But I think they just took it for granted that, oh, here's one of the rota of Radio 1 DJs who does Top of the Pops. He'll know what to do. So the guy would just pass me a mic and he'd say, right, 10 seconds. And so I'd never done a TV show before like that. I'd never practiced sort of timing things for 10 seconds. I've always avoided seeing it again. So the idea that it's sort of come up from the depths of wherever it's been languishing all these years. I'll have to get brave. I'll have to do it, watch it with my wife,
yeah,
Tiggy.
Yeah, you will. I'll sort it out. I'll sort out a copy for you. But it's all really right. Pretty good. You know what I mean?
If you say so, Sean,
yeah,
I'll take it.
No, listen, I'd never lie to you about such a thing.
All together now, who do you want to see?
We want Sweet!
Okay, for Sweet, because of the beginning of the record being as the way it was, and also sometimes, you know, I'd compared quite a few stage shows, and often you do to get the audience going. You often would spell out a name, like, you know, somebody like Otis Redding, give us an O, give us a T, you know, that sort of thing. And so I thought I'd get the crowd chanting, who do we want, you know, so I said to him, who do you want to see?
That's a brand new one from Sweet called Teenage Rampage, so take heed, be warned, and luck of your daughters.
It was funny to see that clip that exists.
It's on YouTube, by the way, if anybody wants to see it.
What do you search for? I don't know, Sweet on Top of the Pops, yeah. 1974.
No, go on, just put in Johnny Walker, Top of the Pops, loud shirt. That's right, beautiful shirt, actually. Just put that in, you'll find it.
Now, isn't that an amazing thing about YouTube and so much on the internet that it actually gives you access to and brings back things that would normally have been gone forever?
And next, on Top of the Pops, Pan's people are all set to do their thing to this week's number 5 song, David Bowie's Rebel Rebel.
Perhaps the most unlikely presenter of Top of the Pops in the 70s would be a record company executive, you might think. But Greg Edwards was a much-in-demand DJ, too.
I used to shout loudly at the BBC because the way they went about putting records on the playlist. And the records that I was releasing at Philadelphia International or Monument or any of the other labels that I had... There's a lot of hard work, hard work beating down on the Radio 1's door to get records played. And finally, I made so much noise about it that I got a call one day sort of saying, you know, you really are such a big mouth. You're just forever shouting at us. If you think that you can do any better than we're doing, we'd like you to present a show that Emperor Roscoe has been doing. His father is ill and he's going to be away for a while. And that was a Saturday lunchtime show. And while doing that, people were liking what I was doing. And, you know, then got a call from Top of the Pops, a guy called Robin Nash. There's a guy who was responsible for that. And would I do Top of the Pops? And I sort of said, reluctantly, okay, because I never had and still don't have any interest whatsoever in TV.
Here are five lads from Liverpool singing, "Who Do You Think You Are?" It's the Candlewick Greens.
Generally find the crowd in the studio. Were they hyped up already, or did they need a little bit of cajoling?
They needed to be cajoled because they were herded. You know, you had to move them along to the next destination where the producer and director wanted them. There were lots of long gaps in between the recording, so they'd get excited. Say, for instance, Bay City Rollers, and they're all excited, and Bay City Rollers come on, and they do their thing, and they're really into it. And then they'd applaud and go crazy, and then the atmosphere died because you've now got to wait until the next act is herded on and go through the whole stuff again from the gallery. Is, oh, can we have you over there, please? Can we do this? Can we do that? And then it all starts up again.
It's TOTP time, so let's hang on in there, baby.
But just like Kenny Everett, Greg Edwards was all set to leave the BBC for London's freshly launched Capital Radio, just as this man had returned to Radio 1 and was back on Top of the Pops. It's Roscoe.
Well, Tilly, I'll tell you, my first Top of the Pops was, in fact, shortly after Radio 1 launch back in 1967. I remember it well, as Pete Murray was on hand to show me the ropes, as it were. But it wasn't really until the 70s that I hosted the show on my own. I can recall introducing Pam's People on the show.
Pam's People have something nice to do right now. A little hip shaking, a little moving and a grooving, gonna make your liver quiver and your back crack. To number 7, Jim Gilstrap, Swing Your Daddy.
Alvin Stardust, Susie Quattro. The Goodies. All of us were doing the Funky Gibbon in the studio.
Anybody seen a gibbon anywhere? I know there's a gibbon. There must be one. Gibbon! You're number 4! Come on, everybody! It's gibbon time!
Most impressive to me of all the bands that I saw actually was Queen. I saw Queen performing there, and they were just awesome. And it just radiated star power, you know. When you first show up there to do Top of the Pops, it was amazing because everybody would go to the pub there at the BBC. And it was like a big club. Everybody kind of talked to each other. It was fluid with promotion people.
Moving on toward that number 1, Bay City Rollers, Say No More. If
you hate me. Radio 1 and Top of the Pops were joined at the hips, really. So it meant a lot. And by having millions of listeners and then millions more viewers on a Thursday evening, it made you a face as well as a voice.
Now, shortly after Top of the Pops reunited with the Emperor, joining the presenter roster was this man, who already had a national profile thanks to a long stint at Radio Luxembourg.
And now on BBC One, here's Paul Burnett.
Tony Blackburn said, come on, give you a taste of the show the week before. And he said, we were in his dressing room, and he said, can you smell that smell? I said, no, what's that? He said, fear. You could smell it. I'll swear I did. mind you, if you can smell fear, something very nasty has happened.
Yes,
anyway,
yes.
We won't go down that road. Of course, who wouldn't be? And the thing is that really, most jocks will tell you this, you always felt like you were in the way, really, because the crew, the floor manager and all the rest of it, you would do a link from this part of the studio, and then you couldn't just walk over to the other part because you might walk into camera or something, because cameras are everywhere. So you'd be guided, and they'd kind of pull you or push you and, come on, over here. And then you'd stand there waiting while the previous act finished. I would have liked to have done more.
Don't panic. You've got the right channel. This is Top of the Pops.
Right now, the most talked about band for months, and people aren't just talking. They're going out and buying the records. Cockney Rebel are there at 17 with Judy Teen.
I joined Radio 1 in February, I think it was, of 74. And shortly afterwards, I was doing the odd Top of the Pops. I was never kind of on the regular, rota, as it were. I always got the impression that when, nobody else could do it, they would give me a ring. Perhaps I'm being over-modest, but that's the impression I got.
Last week, Alan Price sang without his piano. Well, we've got good news for you. He's managed to redeem it, and here he is right now. A new entry at 24, Jarrow Song.
All he cared about was not forgetting the name of the artist you were about to introduce, which is ridiculous, I know, but honestly, when you stand there in front of the camera, I was always asking, is it possible to have kind of what they used to call idiot boards? Just somebody standing there with the name of the artist, and of course they'd look at you and say, it's David Bowie, how can you forget David Bowie's name? Yes, I know, but under those circumstances, I could forget my own mother's name.
Super Sound! Yeah. Here she is, Miss Tina Charles.
Then, all of a sudden, Paul and DLT weren't just introducing the hits, they had one themselves in the charts. But even now, after all these years, they still can't agree between the two of them whose idea it was in the first place.
To present Top of the Pops is one thing, but to appear on it as an artiste is another. And that's what happened in, 1976? It was, of course, not a cover version of anything, except that it was a kind of a different version of an existing hit, which was Convoy GB, Larry Lingo, The Dipsticks. Who came up with that title? I think I did, actually.
I think I came up with the idea of, Convoy being translated into English would be stupid. And I did think of it, and the reason I say I think I thought of it was because I do recall positively thinking I'll do this as a one-off gag.
Yeah.
On the programme. And it was only after I'd sort of put together a couple of bits and pieces, I suddenly thought, this needs somebody else on it. And there's only one man I could think of, and that was Benetti. And so we got it together, and we were having an absolute riot with it.
Time out to go up the M1 motorway to the Scratchway service area, and we are going to find Laurie Lingo, the Plastic Chickens, the Dipsticks, everything, and Convoy GB.
It was a foggy day on the 6th of May in a Scammel Hall in Brixton.
Do a Top of the Pops, and you're screwing for the number one spot until we actually performed it. And I think it's true to say, I'm thinking back now, a record company executive, I'm trying to remember his name, but I can't. He took me to one side, he says, you actually made history by being on Top of the Pops and the record not selling another copy from that moment on. I think it didn't help the fact that I was dressed as a plastic chicken, because that was my sort of code name on the record. And I was in this chicken outfit, which was worn by Tony Hancock in an episode of Hancock's Half Hour. And I was really quite proud to be wearing it until I actually looked at myself. And there was, I was wearing yellow tights for the legs, and my face peering through the beak. Not the most dignified way of being on television. And when we were doing the rehearsal, Dave kept on breaking up. He had the majority of the words to remember, and so every time he forgot the words, he'd start laughing and he'd say to the floor manager, it's Burnett, he's making me laugh, stood there in that chicken suit. And the floor manager came over to me and started giving me a right telling off, and so we're having an argument with me red in the face, not that he knew it, because he couldn't see it.
Burnett was also gearing up to take over the network's lunchtime slot from Johnny Walker. And that meant each afternoon he was handing over to David Hamilton, who by night was a well-known TV face
on that other channel.
Hello, good evening. Welcome once again to Top of the Pops.
Then at the beginning of 1976, finally, you were given that golden ticket, that chance to host Top of the Pops for the very first time, because it took a while to happen, didn't it?
Well, I was working as an announcer for Thames Television, and under the deal of terms of my contract, I wasn't able to do it. So, I had to wait a couple of years, but it was something that I really wanted to do.
It's the cherry on the cake, isn't it?
The first thing that struck me about Top of the Pops was how small the studio was. With clever direction, it was made to look much bigger.
Peter Frampton and Show Me the Way. Does anybody around here like mud? I'd never have guessed it. You better run around there quickly because they're just about to shake it down. New entry at 25. This is Mud. Yeah.
You know, one of the great things about Top of the Pop, Sean, was that it appealed to whole families. You know, a family would sit around the TV, and the music on Radio 1 and also the music on Top of the Pops appealed to everybody from grandparents through to grandchildren. And something that happened then, which I think would never happen today, is interesting how society really has changed, as well as television has changed, is that the whole family would sit there together and look at what was in the chart that week. And that was what was great about the program, and that's really what made it an institution, and why up to 15 million people watched it every week.
Well, that's it. I'll see you on Radio 1 and Radio 2 tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. Don't forget Top of the Pops next Thursday. We leave you this week with a brand new number one across the nation. They have toppled ABBA. They are Pussycat, and this is Mississippi. Till next week. Ta-da! Bye.
1976 was also a pivotal year because it was the last to feature Pan's People gracing the show. In quick stepped Ruby Flipper for a short while before another legendary Flick Colby dance troupe made those weekly routines their own. And it was up to one viewer in particular to choose a name that would go down in Top of the Pops history, as one of its members, Sue, and dear old Stewpot remember.
Pan's People's name obviously had to be changed by now, and we asked our viewers, and I don't remember who was the person. Have we got that on?
Sue does.
Yes, it was a lady called Elaine Coombs, a 13, 14-year-old girl who'd written in, and she came up with the name Legs & Co. But you actually introduced the whole segment by saying that you were a thorn between roses.
A thorn amongst six roses. Here they are, the lovely new Top of the Pops dancers, and it's time for our competition, and what we want you to do is to give them a name. But let's meet the girls first of all. At the end we have...
Patty... Sue.
Rosemary.
Patty, Sue and Rosemary. That side and this side.
Lulu.
Jill. Pauline.
Okay, we'll have a set of judges who will be deciding on which name is best, and the prize winner will be here in the studio on Top of the Pops to give the group their name formally. All right, so let's have your entries in as soon as possible. Here's the address. Dancers competition. Top of the Pops. BBC Television Centre, London, W12 8QT.
Like Noel Edmonds and Paul Burnett before them, the next three new faces to arrive at TOTP had all professionally cut their teeth nationally on Radio Luxembourg, the first being Kid Jensen.
Top of the Pops was a big thing. I never took it for granted that I'd do it, but it was a nice thing that to be offered, because I used to think getting exposure on television, in which I can, you know, say which sessions I was doing and who's guessing on my show on Radio 1.
It's another wild sound, but the scene is a little gentler on the eyes. It's Legs & Co. Shout Battle Lab for Ram Jam and Black Betty.
Most of the programs in those days would have been recorded on a Wednesday for transmission the following evening on the Thursday. And the producer or director would call me up and say, we've got X, Y, and Z appearing on the program. If you'd like to do anything, you know, with the bands in terms of information, or if you'd like to talk to them, have a think, let us know, and we'll see you tomorrow kind of thing. And that's how it worked. And I was lucky enough to work with some great directors and producers doing Top of the Pops in those days.
And I know the Paul McCartney family will be celebrating their Christmas up in Scotland in a big way this year, because they're still at number one in their beautiful Mull of Kintyre.
Peter Powell was also swapping 208 for 247 and was invited to front the Pops before he even started his new Radio 1 Sunday morning programme.
I remember meeting the producer, who was Robin Nash. He went, dear boy, welcome to Top of the Pops. Now then, go and cast your magic. And I think I just bounced on and bounced off.
Number six, Queen and We Are the Champions. Best thing since Bohemian Rhapsody. And now, a little bit of beauty on Top of the Pops. Dorothy Moore and I Believe You. Love it.
DW, Terry Wogan, his version of The Floral Dance. Tonight, the night for tonight, and a brand new single, they come from Southend called The Drummer Man.
Of the actual minute, of the moment, I introduced David Bowie on... I used to call him David Bowie, everyone called him David Bowie, on Top of the Pops, and afterwards, he still, to this day, was the only person who came down to my dressing room, knocked on the door, and said, Peter, thank you very much for your introduction. And I was like, you have no idea how much of a god you are. And that was a mega moment. I was really starstruck.
Turn the volume up, turn the music up, because it's Top of the Pops with the chart rundown and Players Association.
When Peter Powell left Radio Luxembourg to join Radio 1, his replacement in the Grand Duchy was Mike Reed. Fast forward 12 months and Reedy was following him to the BBC, which meant instantly fronting Top of the Pops.
The very first time I appeared on it was with David Lee Travis. He introduced me and said, here's the guy that's going to be doing it next week. And I remember looking, I was sort of bouncing around a bit and not quite knowing what to do, but it was good. It's interesting because the first week, of course, your patron. It was Dave with his arm around me, so I felt okay. And the second week, you're out on your own.
I only wandered in here by accident, but I'm just going to introduce another edition of Top of the Pops. I'm in the fumble, it's
the one across the hall. How did you find Top of the Pops when you got there?
I thought it was great. One of the things that I remember was Blondie was on and Debbie Harry was wearing that green and white dress. And I thought, oh, Debbie Harry. And I thought, I'm allowed to talk to her. I'm presenting the programme. And as she walked past, I opened my mouth to speak, and this sort of squeak came out.
An incredible 35 places to this week's number 29 goes Sylvester at his new single Dance Disco Heat. And here to generate some disco heat of their own are the lovely Lex & Co.
I remember doing photographs when I first started doing Top of the Pops. They took me to Acton. They had a rehearsal room at Acton and put me in the T-shirt and the very skimpy shorts. Where I tucked everything, I don't know. And I did the whole routine thing with Lex & Co, which is great. So I did miss out on the Pants People thing, but Lex & Co sort of and started at the same time.
One of the best new singles, second highest new entry this week, The Members and The Sound of the Suburbs.
At the same time that Mike Reed was feeling the prestige of becoming a brand new Radio 1 DJ, so too was Andy Peebles. Although it took him almost a year before he rocked up at Top of the Pops.
When I arrived at Radio 1 at the end of 1978, I had absolutely no aspirations whatsoever to ever appear on television. I still feel strongly I loathe television. Not literally, I love watching it. But being involved in it is one of the most frustrating experiences a radio person can ever have, because, for instance, on Top of the Pops, we used to have two or three complete run-throughs of a half-hour programme, and all I had to do was introduce a record. You generally had 10 seconds to talk, and hopefully, because we're trained to do it, you talked up to the vocal, did what we call in the business a voiceover, and in general terms, you got it right. I think it was pretty rare for any of us to get that wrong. And that's all you did, and you then stood around while people went, I'm not happy with the lights, love. Sorry, the sound's distorting. Could we retake that? Let's do it again. And cynical old sausage that I am, I used to stand there and think, please, take me back to radio, where everything is instant, and I don't have to worry about all the paraphernalia that goes with it.
The Doolies and The Chosen Few. Well, it's my debut on Top of the Pops, and it's a debut, too, for an Edinburgh-based band, The Head Boys, with their latest single called The Shape of Things to Come.
Doreen Davis, wonderful person. She was number two to Derek Chinnery at Radio 1 at the time. And she, I think, made the phone call to me at home in North London and said, it could have been Robin Nash. I can't remember who produced that day, but Robin was obviously one of the senior names. And she said, I've been having a chat with him and he'd like you to do Top of the Pops. And I said, Doreen, don't be ridiculous. I said, I have the perfect face for radio. Let's get that joke out the way. And really, Doreen, I don't want to do it. And she was pretty forceful and she said, well, we want you to do it because it's great for promoting Radio 1. Well, I couldn't argue with that. So there I was, for the first time in my life, thrown onto television with absolutely no training whatsoever.
It's Chic and My Forbidden Lover from their album Risqué. And now a record which, believe it or not, has been around for 6 months and it's only just become a hit for Dr. Hook. It's called When You're In Love With A Beautiful Woman.
If you think it took a while for Andy Peebles to show his face on Top of the Pops, it was even longer for mid-morning institution Simon Bates.
Welcome to Top of the Pops with Que Sera Mi Vida and the Gibson Brothers.
Firstly, at Radio 1 at this time, you'd been given a daily show in 1977. It was the end of 1979 when you got given your first Top of the Pops. Why is it, do you think, it went 2 years before you were actually invited onto the programme?
Well, because you're looking at me now. No, because there was, genuinely, when you come to that sort of thing, the Tony Blackburns, the Mike Reeds, all of whom I respect hugely for what they do, were the essence of Top of the Pops when the presenter was the local soapbox king. And that wasn't me.
When you did eventually end up doing the show, you became one of the most regular presenters for the best part of 10 years. Did that surprise you in that case?
You never thought like that because it wasn't a regular gig. As far as I know, I've never actually talked to anybody about this. They used to ring you on the Thursday and say, Top of the Pops next week, would you like to do it? Commercially, of course, it was £75. Complete waste of time. But if you, the feeling was that if you didn't do it, however uncomfortable you felt, the bosses at Radio 1 might blink a bit and say, well, he's obviously being difficult, and is this the direction he's going in? In which case, why doesn't he do 12 till 2 in the morning? The ritual, for me anyway, and I don't know about anybody else, was rush off to Monmouth Street and find something to wear that made you look faintly human, and get your hair done.
Moonlight and Music from M. The Stranglers are off to Japan tomorrow, but they're here on Top of the Pops with Don't Bring Harry, their new single.
It was very soon into Simon's long association with TOTP that he encountered the show's new and hugely ambitious boss, a titan in BBC television production, Michael Hurl.
In television, you're trying to do what other people want. And Michael was terrifying. He really was. And I still, to this day, don't know why I was frightened of him, because I didn't care if I did Top of the Pops. You know, if he didn't want to use me, that's fine. And yet, when you got there, he'd say, hello. Hello, Michael. what do you want? A cup of tea would be nice. Fine, get him a cup of tea. And that was the last you'd see of him. He'd sit up in the gallery.
Yeah. Presumably, it could be a very long day.
It was normally technical. The length of time. One studio, seven different positions for seven different bands. I've got to say, mostly pre-recorded. When I started with Top of the Pops, Johnny Pearson had a 14-piece orchestra in the corner. That went very quickly and it became playback. American artists were not that difficult. They were very pro. But a lot of artists, the young ones, the new ones, found it very intimidating to do it and to do it on command. And again, going back to Michael Hurl, Michael really didn't take anything from anybody. And if the band was in the least bit difficult, wanted to wear a T-shirt saying Maggie Thatcher's a so-and-so or whatever, then they would be off and he'd replace them within seconds.
There are five young guys from Islington who are causing a real buzz in the music industry, and we've got them on Top of the Pops tonight. Their names collectively are Spandau Ballet, and the single title is To Cut a Long Story Short. Have a listen to this.
The dawning of a new era in the 80s also meant the arrival of one of the network's biggest names during the decade. Although Ricey found it all quite bizarre at first.
I don't remember the first Top of the Pops because it was a total blur.
Hello, I'm Steve Wright and welcome to another edition of Top of the Pops and the chance to Jefferson Starship.
You go down there and you rehearse and you think, you just can't believe you're doing that show that previously you'd watched for years and years and years.
Okay, I understand Freddie Mercury and his band Queen have been getting into ballet recently. Let's hear their latest single.
You find yourself on Radio 1 and you find yourself doing Top of the Pops and you think, this is not right. I mean, I definitely thought, you're an imposter, aren't you, right?
Billy Joel, and it's still rock and roll to me. Did you know Billy Joel used to be a boxer? Not a lot of people know that. Right, let's count down from 30 to 11. And it is Billy Joel, it's still rock and roll to me at 30. At 29, are you getting enough from Hot Chocolate? 28 is A Walk in the Park from the Nick Straker Band.
Also making his Top of the Pops debut at this time was Radio 1 rock god Tommy Vance.
Hi, everybody. Good evening and welcome once again to Top of the Pops. This is the program that does not hang around. Immediately, we bring you the Slade and we'll bring the house down.
and Richard Skinner, initially as an experiment of Michael Hurls to add a journalistic edge to the show.
Sean, doing Top of the Pops was always an enormous deal. I knew that because through the 70s when I was working on Newsbeat, it was where I went to get the cream of the pop interviews, because you just went to the recording and you knew everyone was going to be there. And it was actually while I was on Newsbeat still that I was co-opted onto Top of the Pops to present a very short-lived news slot on the programme Pop News.
This time we go to America and some news, some hot news from Los Angeles, where Blondie are in the studio recording again with their producer Mike Chapman, who worked with them on Parallel Lines and Eat to the Beat. Well, this time around the band say they're changing their sound because they're fed up with rock and roll. The new LP, they say, will be a disco album. Can't wait to hear it.
And then later, when I became a DJ rather than a news presenter, I became part of the regular rota of presenters on Top of the Pops from Radio 1, and lots of fun was always had at the recordings, although actually the best shows ever were the live-to-air programmes, which happened in the mid-80s, and you were standing there and the countdown was coming and that theme tune played, and you knew you were broadcasting to one of the biggest audiences in Europe live. It was a hell of a buzz.
You know, it's been a great year for new names in the charts. Take Orchestral Manoeuvres in the Dark.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
He's got to agree. Also, a band from Basildon called Depeche Mode.
Yeah. Now, that's Richard on the Christmas 1981 edition of the Pops, the first to be introduced by all the Radio 1 DJs combined, including Adrian Just.
I was sort of propped up there, and I come out and said, right, love, you've got to come out of back announce 10cc. Then you've got to do Kirsty McCall. There's a guy who works down the chip shop, swears he's Elvis. Remember how long that title is. And we've got an Elvis lookalike, but I look more like Elvis than this guy's body. And see if you introduce him into the link. You've got 8 seconds.
Hello, it's nice to be here on the special Christmas edition. Here I am, surrounded by all the glamour and glitter. I really must buy a licence. Down here, there's a little lady who's going to sing one of my favourite numbers of 1981, Kirsty McCall. There's a guy right down the chip shop, swears he knows me.
That programme was also notable as it was John Peel's first time co-hosting since the late 60s. And it went down so well that Peely became a series regular by 1982.
And welcome to Top of the Pops. This is my first Top of the Pops in 14 years, but it's consistency that counts, so you can watch for me again in 1996. And in case you're thinking to yourselves, who is that twerp? I'm the bloke who comes on the radio late at night, plays you records by lots of sulky Belgians. These people are not Belgian. Theatre of Hate.
And in September of that year, Top of the Pops assembled the DJ team all together again to celebrate this special anniversary.
Happy birthday,
Top of the Pops. Today it's Radio 1's 15th anniversary, and to help celebrate, all my Radio 1 colleagues are here to help introduce the hits, and we kick off with Dexy's Midnight Runners and Jackie Rosenfeld.
Radio 1's 15th birthday edition, infamous for the Scottish dance player Jockey Wilson's face appearing on the big screen in the studio, and not Jackie's, although it was deliberately requested by the band themselves as an ongoing in-joke, and it also heralded the first appearance of another 80s stalwart on TOTP, Mike Smith.
1982 was a great year for Eddie Grant, and a great year for Radio 1 as well, because from December we went 18 hours a day, so I hope after all these festivities are over you'll join me on the early show Monday to Friday. That's the hard sell. Now here's the soft sell.
Shortly afterwards, that extension to Radio 1's broadcasting hours that the late Smithy was talking about there meant three other new DJs were recruited who found themselves instantly on TOTP, such as Gary Davis.
For the rest of 1982, this next group had no less than 4 big hits. They've currently got a song in the charts at the moment called Changes. Is it just an illusion? No, it really is imagination.
And again, this would have been something that you would have been watching as a boy, dreaming of being part of.
Yeah, I used to watch Top of the Pops every week, and I would fall in love with all the dancers there and all the girls in the audience. Oh, the most beautiful girls. Oh, I'd just love to be in the audience one day, and let alone end up presenting it. Mind you, my first few appearances were horrific.
Really?
Absolutely horrific. I mean, talk about nerves. I was just like a rabbit in the headlights.
Not just one of the best bands
bands of 1982, but certainly the busiest. They've already got two gold albums, and they've played a massive 250 dates across the country. But they've still got the energy to be with us tonight. It's Shack Attack and Nightbirds.
And then the feedback came back afterwards. From my manager, said Michael Hill said, look, he really didn't like you on Top of the Pops, and he's not going to use you anymore. This is like, I can understand, because I was pretty horrible. But actually, he didn't use me, I think, 2 or 3 months, and then the next thing I know, he gave me another crack, and you were ready for it. I was back on it.
Another fresh face was Pat Sharp, who still remembers being unveiled by Peter Powell.
He said there are some new Radio 1 DJs, and they used Top of the Pops to introduce them, because it was quite rare to have three guys join the station at the same time. I don't think anybody would care nowadays, but back then it was a big thing, yeah. And, you know, first of all, he introduced Janice Long, and then Gary, and then finally me, and he said...
OK, third and finally, and the youngest, and actually one of the tallest, that's why I've had to put him down a step or two, is Pat Sharp. Pat, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Peter, good evening.
So you have to get up very early, don't you?
6 o'clock, it starts Sunday morning, so I have to be up about 4.
That gives Radio 1 18 hours broadcasting every day, that's 6 till 12 every day, which is excellent news. Welcome to the team. Are you a good footballer?
Average.
Because we need good footballers in the Radio 1 football team.
That's it, you're all getting it together on the football front, but if you want me... It will be sort of reasonable fee, you know.
All right, well, yeah. we'll pay that transfer fee to have some young blood on the field.
Good evening. Tremendous solo success for the Fun Boy 3 in 1982, and also for Sarah, Siobhan and Karen. And they got together in February to produce this single. And it ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it.
We thought about our first Top of the Pops appearance when you were there with Gary and Janice alongside Peter Powell. Eventually, one of the spin-offs, of course, being a Radio 1 DJ, is that you became a regular host of the show. Very different, I would imagine, when you're turning up to TV Centre, knowing that it's just you and one other person doing it.
Absolutely, yes, that was different because I was the co-host. I only did it probably 3 or 4 times, I think, because I wasn't on my... Sunday morning early show slot for very long. I think I did it for 9 months, so 3 contracts of 3 months each, which was fine. They were trying out new people and I got replaced. If I look back at it, when it's been rerun on BBC4, I do think I look rather awkward.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I'm kind of like, I used to think, well, that camera's not going to get me in. I better give him a hand. I mean, he's at a funny angle there, trying to be clever. So let me just stand up a bit over here so I can get in. And I think...
Did you get any pointers from anybody?
No. Nobody told you
what to do. No help whatsoever?
No. You used to just rehearse and work out your clever lines and what you were going to say, which weren't very clever. I just gave it my best shot, and it was an amazing experience. Doing Top of the Pops was a real buzz because, you know, the next morning, people looked at you like you were a freak because they go, it's you. I saw you. Everybody saw it.
Back on the music front, the Stranglers had 2 great hit singles this year. One was called Strange Little Girl, the other, Live Golden Brown.
More about Janice Long shortly, and by May 1983, it was Radio 1's turn to celebrate a significant Top of the Pops milestone, as Richard Skinner recalls.
The 1,000th Top of the Pops was a strange one because I had to start the show dressed up like a penguin in a black tie suit in the Radio 1 studios in Broadcasting House.
First on BBC 1, we arrive at a milestone in television history with the 1,000th edition of Top of the Pops. To begin our simultaneous broadcast in stereo, we now go over to the Radio 1 studio in Broadcasting House and Richard Skinner.
Good evening. Welcome to Radio 1's inner sanctum. This is the Radio 1 continuity suite where we're standing by with bated breath for the first stereo transmission of Radio 1. With me in the studio tonight, and don't forget to stand by your stereo radios, will you? This is David Jacobs from the very first team of DJs on Top of the Pops. David, it must seem a long time ago. Good evening.
It seems a very long time ago, so far away that I've almost forgotten all about it, but I'm sure that I shall be reminded as I see some of the clips or hear some of the songs that we used to play in those days.
Now, doing Top of the Pops in those days, was it really very different to what you imagine most modern television pop is like today?
No, I don't think it was very different at all, except, of course, the majority of things were live, and we didn't have those marvellous video films that you have now, where sometimes the video is better than the song.
Live, you've got the word for it. Tonight we're live on Radio 1 in stereo, junior radios to 88 to 91 megahertz VHF. Now is your chance, because it's number 1,000, it's Top of the Pops.
The programme started,
Immediately, David Jacobs and I hightailed it down the stairs into a cab, rushed all the way to Television Centre, and made it to appear in the studio, not in our dinner jackets, I'd like to say, for the actual end of the show.
The resident rhythm pals on Nighttime Radio 1 at this stage were Jensen and Peel, who also formed a more than potent partnership on the Pops.
The kid's got a bit of a joke for you here. This is Jimmy the Hoover.
Yeah, I reckon they're really going to clean up.
Hey, that's really great.
All right, if you think you're so clever, let's hear you do the chart.
Okay. I don't know whose idea it was to dress up in different themed clothing for each Top of the Pops. We were sometimes Robin Hood and his Merry Man. We were gladiators. We had all sorts of funny, silly little things that the audience didn't seem too irked by, so we just kept going.
And he'd have a jumper on saying David Jensen, and you'd be wearing a John Peel jumper.
He got those made as a funny thing.
How much thought would go into that? Did you talk very much about what you were going to do on that week's show, or did you literally just do it off the hip?
We would do it off the hip.
Because it's his idea.
He's only sulking because he wanted to be made merry.
And after Jensen, it was Janice and John.
Hello, welcome to a live Top of the Pops. I'm Auntie Janice.
And I'm Uncle John, and we're going to play you some songs from the hit parade, aren't we, Janice?
They're smashing like the Star Council, and walls come tumbling down.
We were mates, and both love music. Both from the same neck of the woods, and we just hit it off straight away. And when David Jensen left Radio 1 to go to Capital, Peely would only do Top of the Pops with me. So, to Michael Hull, I'm not going to do it unless I can do it with Janice. And we used to have such a laugh.
Great pair of trousers. I'm really into men's trousers.
Well, the less said about that, the better, if you ask me.
We'd be chatting, and then we'd think, oh, should we say that? And he'd go, you can't say that, because you might get in trouble, but I can say that. And then I'd go, all right, well, and I'll do that.
Have you know that I had him on my bedroom wall?
That seems to indicate a degree of agility I didn't believe you're capable of, Janice, I must say.
We used to have great, great fun, giggling and being told off sometimes for some of the things we said. I remember him telling me once, and I can't remember whether this was at Top of the Pops or we were in Radio 1, but he said that he would like to actually get rid of everybody at Radio 1, apart from me. He said I could stay. And Bruno Brooks, but he put him on reception.
We're going to play out, dearly beloved, with Amy Stewart.
Can I just say happy birthday to Peely? Good night.
But there was to be no role on reception for Bruno. Instead, he was thrust into the limelight under the guiding influence of a Top of the Pops veteran, Dave Lee Travis.
I'd only been at Radio 1 for a few months, and I didn't really expect to be presenting Top of the Pops so quickly. I think typically it would take a couple of years before you'd end up on telly as such. But I really enjoyed it. And the one thing I really, really know, well, the one thing I really remember is that I was absolutely petrified.
A very special edition for this young man. It's his first appearance on the show proper. Girls, hang on to your armchairs. It's Bruno Brooks.
Thank you very much indeed. Here we start with Tesla Girls from OMD.
It was so iconic. And then to realise that you were actually presenting it was really scary. I mean, it was the one occasion when I actually experienced a cold sweat. So basically I was freezing cold, but I was dripping. Just the nervous system was just going overboard.
But not a bad person to host your first one with, DLT. I'm sure he looked after you, didn't he?
He did. You know, Dave's Dave, and he's a character. What you see is what you get, and he likes to be in charge as well. He's, you know, one of the granddads of pop radio, and, you know, respect to him for that and for looking after me on the day.
Well, that's it. I hope you enjoyed your first Top of the Pops, Bruno.
Absolutely great. Andy Peebles and Steve Wright doing it next week, of course.
Yes, that's it. We've got to say goodbye now, but I think we ought to finish as we started, don't you?
Absolutely.
Oh, good night.
Thanks a lot, pal.
Good night, everyone.
Bye. I was incredibly impressed in the way that the show was managed. There were two, if not sometimes three, rehearsals before a live or a pre-recorded show. Obviously managing, you know, an audience who are similarly as excited as seeing some of the biggest stars on the planet, and being there just so close to them. And it, just the fact that it, you know, had an impact on everybody's lives. I mean, certainly between 12 and 50, you know, everybody would have appeared to have seen Top of the Pops, or if they hadn't seen it that week, somebody had told them about something that was on it. And then, of course, you had the Radio 1 guys, including myself, talking about Top of the Pops on air. And then you had the magazines writing about Top of the Pops and printing photographs. So, you know, it was a phenomenon. And I don't think it's ever going to return. And I'm just so glad that I was part of it.
One of those bands that I've liked for a long time is As Their Camera. And their new one, All I Need Is Everything, is probably the best one I've heard so far. It's at number 34 on the chart this week. Here we go.
I think one of the most important things I had to realise very quickly, and the reason why I was chosen to be at Radio 1, is because you had to be original. You had to be yourself. You couldn't sound like anybody else. Nobody can sound like you. You sometimes forget that you are original. You're original, Sean. Everyone's actually original. There's only one you. There's only one me. And sometimes it's very easy for us to fall into a trap to be influenced by other people, to be like them. It was a massive mistake if you go that way. So I thought about that when presenting Top of the Pops.
All right, just to prove that unusual combinations work, is Gary Numan and Bill Sharp, and guests, Change Your Mind.
By the mid-80s, jumping ship from Radio Caroline and joining the BBC was Dixie Peach, who, after being gently ushered onto the Radio 1 Roadshow stage for the first time by the network's breakfast host, was rather chuffed to be receiving his Top of the Pops inauguration from him too.
Welcome to Britain's best-loved serial, Top of the Soaps. You've seen him on Radio 1 for the first ever time on television, a natural, life-size effigy of Dixie Peach.
Thanks, Mike. I've been laying in the sun in anticipation for this big event.
Summer of 1985, June thereof, first ever Top of the Pops with Mike Reed, because
right.
We've mentioned Mike, your first roadshow with him, and a wonderful person to do your first Top of the Pops with, because he was so experienced at doing the programme.
That's the whole point, I think, of them putting me with him, because Mike was so experienced. That's on the roadshow and on Top of the Pops.
Kids TV he was doing on a Saturday
that's
morning
right.
as well.
So it's great to go along in his wake and sort of build my own thing up.
Can anything prepare you for that, though? Because you've
Nothing
watched
can.
It for all those years on TV, and all of a sudden there you are, rocking up at TV Centre. You must have been incredibly nervous.
I couldn't describe how nervous I was. But being around someone who's as experienced as Mike, the best guy, one of the best guys to be around in a situation like that.
And also, I think, you know, people like Peter Powell, who you did Top of the Pops with, again, Peter, very much that kind of character. And Gary
very
Davis,
so.
A very generous
very
guy
much
as well.
So.
Yeah.
All the guys. I was lucky. I was lucky to have met some really excellent characters. And everyone saw you as part of the team. It really helped. Everyone thinks about disc jockeys as being these egos who are completely self-absorbed. It was not the case that I found when I got there. I found it was quite open, quite relaxed, which made it incredibly enjoyable.
Now, presently doing a tour over here is Sister Sledge, and going up 18 places to number 11 is Frankie.
As the station gave a break to new names like Paul Jordan, it naturally meant a crack at TV's music event of the week, and he knows exactly where he was when he got the call.
The very first time I heard, I was actually in the middle of a show on Radio 1, and the hotline rang, and when this hotline rang, you had to answer it. That was the law. And picked up was my manager, who was a very well-known manager. And he said, we've got Top of the Pops.
Welcome to Top of the Pops for the very first time to Paul Jordan.
Thanks very much indeed, Gary. Have we got a great show for you tonight. We've got a wonderful show. We have Cameo. We have Iron Maiden. We also have Renee and Angela. And a brand new number one.
But first, to get us underway, a superb song at number 10 in the charts. Here is Colonel Abrams and Trap.
It was exciting, definitely. A little bit daunting, not a lot daunting, but a little bit daunting. I didn't really know what was ahead of me, but I was well looked after. And I did that first show with Gary Davis, who was a good guy, and they put me with Gary Davis because he was a solid, dependable guy. He wasn't one of the sort of people who would try and trip you up and make a fool out of you. You know, you could trust him. And on those double-headed Top of the Pops shows, as they were back in those days, and when you were given 20 seconds between you to do a link, and you rehearsed it twice with maybe your partner going first, taking up the first 10 seconds, and then you, with what you're going to say, taking up the second 10 seconds, you know, the guy who went first could easily mess it up for you and make you look like a fool. And you've got to bear in mind, it's television. It's not like radio. Anything can be instantly fixed in radio and it's forgotten. With television, it's like turning an oil tanker around.
Hey, that's the way to do it. Right in. in, no messing about. Wham at number two this week, and I'm Your Man. Now, she changed the style somewhat, but she still played with Wham, and she also plays with the Style Council, and she's gone solo for this effort. It's the highest climber on the top 40 chart this week, up to number 18. She is DC Lee, and this is See the Day.
The studio itself wasn't particularly busy. You'd see the dancers in there. What you'd see on the television at home, you see people dancing. There'd probably be about 50 people in there, and probably 20 or so of them would be people who'd written in for tickets, and they were herded all over the place. The remaining 30 or so were dancers, professional dancers that had been brought in by an agency, so they looked good when they danced and all that sort of thing. If you look back at old Top of the Pops back in 1968, 1970, if you ever see them on YouTube or what have you, and you see the people dancing then, you know they were members of the public. Mm-hmm. And I think producers have thought over the years, well, we're going to get some people that actually look good and look as if they know the moves they're moving. And that was certainly the case back in my day on Top of the Pops.
Keeping the Christmas feel and festivity of the whole season going, here's Alan Jones and Walking in the Air.
Others became a long-term fixture, such as Simon Mayo, even though it was a slightly shaky start, given the enormity of Radio 1, let alone the Pops.
Yeah, I remember the first time I did it, because it was a catastrophe, pretty much. Janice,
in what respect?
Well, Janice Long, I had like a walk-on.
Well, I am me, but who is he? Well, this is Simon Mayo. He's Radio 1's latest history group. Where are you from?
I'm from Nottingham, and I'm doing Gary's Bit in the Middle for Last One Tomorrow, and then I start a new show Saturday night, May the 3rd.
So you've really been thrown in at the deep end.
Oh, yeah. Shall I do a twirl?
Yes, please. Can we have a twirl? This is what he looks like. He's all
expensive,
right, isn't it?
Expensive gear, this.
We can all lust over him. Right, I'm going to throw you in at the deep end. You're on Top of the Pops.
No problem.
Do some work. Introduce them.
OK, now live on Top of the Pops, up 10 places to 21, the Pet Shop Boys.
But I didn't look at the camera once. So I looked at Janice and then I looked at the Pet Shop Boys. You know, and that was it. It was only afterwards that I realised, you know, the whole point is that you look at the camera in here.
Had you got any television experience before, though?
No, nothing. No, not at all. So, yes, you're quite right. Doing Radio 1 and Top of the Pops at the same time is head spinning. And it's hard to explain, really, to a younger audience quite how iconic both of these things were, because media is now so diverse. You know, however good music programmes are, or Radio 1 is or isn't, nothing has the impact that it... to be honest, even in the 80s, it was less powerful than it was. You know, if you were a Radio 1 presenter in the 70s, then you were a big rock star. Yeah, but it was huge. You know, you turned up on Top of the Pops, people noticed you the next day.
A few months ago, Paul Young recorded his new LP in Milan. This is the first single from it, and it's Wonderland.
The whole Top of the Pops Radio 1 experience was something. You had to master the art of the 8-second link, you know, or if you're lucky, it was 10. It really didn't matter what you said. You know, they didn't care what you said, which is why often the links were pretty banal. There wasn't really much time for putting any kind of personality into it. And one time I actually introduced the band, I gave them the wrong name. And there were two bands around at the time. One was called Broken English and the other was called Modern English.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't remember which one it was, but I introduced the wrong one. And I told the floor manager, who told the producer, and they said, it's fine, doesn't matter.
It's unbelievable.
I gave them the wrong name.
That was their big moment as well, because I don't think they had another hit, did they?
Well,
it wasn't your fault, by the way.
Very good. Well,
I remember. Was it Coming On Strong, Broken English? That was it. Yeah. Good record.
Then there was Radio 1's long-established voice of early mornings, Adrian John, who after a few cameo roles during birthday and festive specials, finally got his shot in the late 1980s.
Thanks, Bruno. Yes, here we are, kicking off with Joy Sims at number 24 with Walk Away.
I would go into the dressing room and I would just have this terrible pain in my stomach. This was so big. I went out there and I couldn't control the adrenaline. You know, a virtuoso performers in orchestras, they'll have some kind of beta blocker or something to calm them down when they're doing this solo. And that's what I don't say I need it. I mean, there's obviously better ways perhaps than using that kind of thing. But I definitely was nervous. And I think it came across. I didn't understand the science of TV. I didn't understand the magic of how you become a relaxed performer. I never had enough of it to do that. But to be able to say I was on top of of the Pops on a number of occasions is just tremendous.
Meanwhile, at 29, it's a new entry from Magnum. Sweet Talking Love, and here they are.
As we heard earlier, Top of the Pops 1000 was the first edition to be simulcast on Radio 1 in 1983. But by the end of the decade, this became a weekly event, just in time for the network's newly launched FM transmitters that were now sprouting up all over the UK. It was an operation that was overseen by producer Mick Vilkoich.
Obviously, going into it, it was easy, but coming out of it, you've got to chase the music, the Sig music. It was the Paul Hardcastle Sig tune in those days, and you had to chase that because you knew vaguely when TV Con were going to be talking. So and they'd say we're going to jump in as quickly as possible. So you had to do that mix. So you had to sync in the music in the studio in the Con, and Faye one bring the other in, and so it was fun and games, and that was good for us. I mean, it in terms of selling the FM idea.
Hello, welcome to a very special Top of the Pops tonight. It's the first ever nationwide stereo simulcast. The man speaks the truth, and here are the frequencies in central Scotland at 98.6.
Yes, 98.6.
In the north at 98.8 FM.
98.8.
And in the Midlands at 98.4 FM now.
98.4.
This is my Top of the Pops at 60, the Radio 1 years with Sean Tilley.
For the first 3 years of the 90s, Top of the Pops made the controversial decision to drop the Radio 1 DJs, which resulted, unsurprisingly, in media-wide panning as well as a decline in ratings. However, the rule was overturned in 1994 when the network's presenters were once again welcomed with open arms. And it's an association that still continues today, with Radio 1 DJs fronting the annual Top of the Pops review shows on BBC TV. I'm Sean Tilley. Thanks for listening not only to this programme, but the Top of the Pops playback and My Radio 1 series as a whole. I wish you a very happy 2024 and, of course, a happy 60th birthday to Top of the Pops.